is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for June 2, 2005. Today, we'll be continuing our coverage of the latest news from the Passamaquoddy resistance to the Liquefied Natural Gas Corporation that wants their land. Maine continues to lead the nation in terms of fair trade policy. We'll bring you news from that front. And we'll learn why Plum Creek, the corporation that's proposing the largest development in Maine's history, has been known for years as the Darth Vader of the timber industry. All that in 28 radioactive minutes. And we'll start with the Plum Creek issue. Tuesday, activists converged on their offices, Plum Creek's offices in Fairfield, hoping to call attention to concerns about the half-million-acre development that's proposed for the Moosehead Lake region. Joining us by phone today is Hillary Lister, who's been covering the issue for Maine Indy Media's newspaper, The Maine Commons. Welcome, Hillary.
Hello. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. It's been a while, and we always appreciate having your input as a reporter for Maine Indy Media and making that link. So you were at the protest, and you've also been doing coverage for a while now on the Plum Creek issues and the developments that they do. Tell us a little bit about who Plum Creek is.
Well, Plum Creek is the second largest private timber landowner in the U.S. They own 8 million acres in the U.S. They're also the third largest land developer. In 1998, they bought almost about 905,000 acres in Maine. Since then, they've bought a good 50,000 acres more, and they're the third largest landowner in Maine.
And where did the Darth Vader name come from?
That came from their activities when, in 1990, out in Washington, they'd gained a reputation for liquidation forestry, where basically they would log the forests and then sell them off for development. It was actually in response to the then executive, Bill Parsons, had stated, "We have never said we were on a sustained yield program, and we have never been on a sustained yield program. Let's get to the heart of it. Sure, it's extensively logged, but what's wrong with that?"
And that's a quote from a Plum Creek
executive.
That's
a quote from, yep. And in response, the Washington State Representative, Rod Chandler, who's a Republican and has been called one of the most vocal timber industry advocates in Congress, commented that within the industry, Plum Creek is considered the Darth Vader of the state of Washington.
And unfortunately, we don't have a copy of it here at the station, but there is a song that environmentalists sometimes sing around campfires with the lines, Earth first, we'll log the other planets later, referring to Plum Creek's philosophy on logging. So what's proposed for the Moosehead Lake region?
Well, it's basically it's a rezoning for general development on a good section of their land that's currently, they're suggesting about at least 1,000 house lots. Two resorts have been talked about, stuff that would basically change the nature of that whole region, which really hasn't been developed much. They did do a pretty major development in 2001. It's the largest subdivision ever in Maine's unorganized territories in Cocajo, and they subdivide much of the area surrounding First Rich Pond into 89 camp lots. And they've been making extensive profits on this. They bought the land at about $200 an acre from Sappi, South African Pulp and Paper. And then while they were lauding themselves on selling a 65-mile strip of lakeshore and riverfront property to the state for the public reserve land system, they sold that at $652 an acre. And since then, they've been selling stuff at over $1,000, $1,300 an acre.
Well, here in Maine, they say that they're going to protect a lot of that land for at least 30 years and that they're going to have low-income housing as part of their plan. It sounds quite altruistic. What's the reality behind that?
It seems like basic greenwashing. The 30-year plan doesn't guarantee anything other than that they'll be focusing their development efforts on the area of land that they've proposed for general development right now, and then 30 years from now can come back to the State Land Use Regulation Committee and ask for more of it to be rezoned. And at that time, it might very well make sense if they've built up and developed it and it's no longer seen as an area that's, you know, not suited for general development. And as for the possible low-income housing they've talked about, according to the Greenville town manager, John Simcoe, he said the housing would likely be single-family and duplex homes costing upwards of $100,000 to $150,000.
Which is not really affordable up in the Greenville area.
No. And it's just, yeah, this is stuff where just property taxes already are starting to skyrocket just with the property values going up and really pushing people out and also closing off access to areas that have traditionally been sort of open for camping, just visiting, fishing. And they're especially targeting some of the most beautiful areas in that area since that's their highest value use. Out west, they got known for extensively logging low value for real estate areas and then trading those areas to the state for conservation land or state land and getting ideal development land from the state.
Well, what about jobs? If people's taxes go up, they'll at least have these jobs that are being promised by Plum Creek, right?
Except that they'd have nowhere to live there, and most of these jobs are temporary development and just...
So construction...
Plum Creek has historically, out in Montana, they've really been a target of a lot of frustration from small timber companies, small wood processors, since they've been able to process the wood for the lowest value and get all of the state contracts and have put a lot of small businesses out of business.
So it's a quality of life issue. The jobs that we're talking about are not going to be the kinds of jobs that will really sustain somebody with the new economy that would come to the area.
Sure.
And traditional uses of the land will be gone as well.
Yep, and they're also not paying much in the way of taxes to the local community since they get the benefit of the tree growth tax write-off plus their real estate investment trust, which makes it so they have even more loopholes they can get through to avoid paying taxes to the local area.
And where are they based out of? Are they still out of
They're
Washington?
Based out of Seattle, yep, Seattle, okay. Washington.
So the process that's going on now is that they need to get this plan approved by they have somebody working for them in developing a plan that's a former LURC employee?
Yep. It's a former LURC commissioner, Elizabeth Swain, who I wish I had some quotes from her, but I don't immediately, has basically come out saying that the developers need to be represented as well. And she's been... on retainer with them from Barton and Gingold, working to develop a plan which has been submitted to LURC now. It's the largest proposal that LURC has ever received, and right now LURC is extremely underfunded. Their comprehensive plan is out of date, so if they do consider approving this right now, it will be under an out-of-date approval plan.
So the process itself for approving it is out of date?
Yep, and just...
Go ahead.
And the thing with LURC is that it can turn down plans. They're held by a process that if the plans don't balance development with natural resources and the public good, LURC has the ability to turn down the plans. But it's the question of whether LURC being very small and underfunded will really take that stand.
Will LURC have public hearings to get input?
They say they will be having public hearings. They have to on something of this size. The other frustrating thing with this, though, is the word through the grapevine from one of the people working with the state on this process is one of the concerns was that LURC just doesn't have the funding and people resources to be able to review a plan of this scope. And there's word that Plum Creek will be offering their assistance in that.
Okay. So it's definitely a process that bears watching. What's the next step, and how can people get more information about and continue to monitor it, besides listening to Radioactive, because we'll keep covering it as well?
Yeah. Well, we're continuing to cover it both on the main Independent Media Center website and in the main Commons.
So give the contact information for those, if you would.
The website is Maine, Maine, Indie Media, IndyMedia.org. And the newspaper, you can get a copy by writing to Maine Commons, P.O. Box 1444, Waterville, Maine, 04903, or you can email editor@mainecommons.org, that's EDITOR at Maine, MAINECOMMONS.org. And also just checking out the State of Maine website. I don't have the URL on me right now, but there is a website for LURC itself, and they have continued updates of what meetings and public hearings.
I think if you go to maine.gov, you can get a link to that.
Yep, and you can actually get on a mailing list where they'll update you on all of the hearings, too.
Right, and people can also stop by the station. We have some of the Maine Commons are always here at the station as well. If anybody's driving by, just pop in. They're right here in the lobby. So thanks for that information, Hillary, and
sure.
We'll continue to stay in contact and get updates on this very important issue. That's Hillary Lister of the Maine Indy Media's Maine Commons newspaper reporting on the Plum Creek issue. And next, we'll be speaking with Matt Schlobum. He's the coordinator of the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, and he also works with the Maine Citizen Trade Policy Commission. And he's joining us today with some news about the growing opposition to CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement. Welcome back to Radioactive, Matt Schlobum.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
We've covered CAFTA pretty extensively on Radioactive, and because we're also pretty pressed for time here today, we're hoping that you can summarize this very complicated issue of CAFTA in just a sentence or two, just to remind people of what CAFTA is and why the opposition to that and to other so-called free trade agreements is so strong.
Sure. CAFTA is a trade agreement between the U.S. and six Central American countries that would expand NAFTA to Central America. And the opposition to it is so strong because it's a trade agreement that really pushes standards down throughout the Central American region and in the U.S. and really benefits the largest multinational businesses and doesn't benefit the majority of workers and small farmers and our democracy and our environment and public services in the region. So there is very broad-based opposition to the agreement.
And the Maine Citizen Trade Policy Commission just made a recent announcement regarding their stance on CAFTA. Who are they, and what was that announcement?
The Maine Citizen Trade Policy Commission was created by the state legislature in 2004. It's a 22-member citizen commission composed of legislators and citizens from different sectors. And it's really charged with monitoring the impact that trade agreements are having on Maine's economy, Maine workers, Maine businesses, and Maine's democracy and our ability to set laws. And the commission has been up and running for almost a year now and really trying to understand how these trade deals are impacting Maine. The commission held two public hearings and over the last couple of months, one in Bangor and one in Portland, to hear testimony from the public on CAFTA. And the public sentiment at those hearings was overwhelmingly opposed to CAFTA. Everyone who testified fully supported trade. They just wanted to see trade that was really mutually beneficial and rules that were fair. So as a result of that testimony and that public sentiment, the commission today sent out a letter to the congressional delegation where the commission formally came out opposed to CAFTA for a number of reasons and strongly urged Maine's entire congressional delegation to vote against the agreement, which is sitting in Congress as we speak.
Now, Senator Snow has a particular role to play here as she sits on the Finance Committee. They have a meeting that's scheduled to come up around June 14th. Can you talk a little bit more about how Maine's congressional delegation has a role to play in this, and specifically Snow?
Sure. Senator Snow has a really important role to play in CAFTA. The next big moment in the CAFTA debate in Congress will be on the Senate Finance Committee, where they're holding something called a mock markup. And Senator Snow is a real key vote there, and the way she goes may very well determine kind of what happens to the agreement. So we're doing a lot of work to urge Senator Snow to oppose CAFTA. Both of Maine's senators are currently undecided on the agreement. Representative Michoud and Representative Allen have both come out publicly opposed to CAFTA, but both of our senators haven't taken a position yet.
And we are expecting the vote might come to the full floor when?
The Bush administration and Republican leadership is pushing for a vote on CAFTA before the July 4th recess, so sometime in late June is what they're aiming for. They don't currently have the votes to pass it, and we're working to make sure that they don't have those votes, but there could be a vote as soon as late June.
And is the U.S. the last country in CAFTA, DR, CAFTA as it's called because it includes the Dominican Republic, the last country to need to ratify?
Nope. Costa Rica and Honduras have also not passed it yet. Or Costa Rica and Nicaragua, I'm sorry, haven't passed it yet. Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador have passed it. So there are three countries that still haven't passed it, including the United States.
Great. And any numbers you would like to give out for people who would like to give input or find out more information?
Sure. I think the most important thing that people could do if they wanted to take action on CAFTA right now is to call or write Senator Snow and urge her to oppose this agreement. She's a really pivotal vote, and she's undecided, and she needs to hear from her constituents. So you can call Senator Snow toll-free in Maine at 1-800-432-1599. And you could also write to her local offices. You can find that on the web or in the phone book, her local address. And again, that number to call Senator Snow is 1-800-432-1599. If people would like to find out more information about the Maine Fair Trade Campaign, you could go to www.mainefairtrade.org or email info@mainefairtrade.org or call 777-6387.
And are people still collecting petitions for the mothers and women against CAFTA?
They are. There's a recent campaign that was launched by a number of mothers and women throughout the state who are very concerned about the disproportionately negative impact that trade policies have on women and mothers throughout the world. And so there's a big petition drive going on across the state aimed at both of Maine's senators. And those petitions are up online at www.mainefairtrade.org if anyone wants to sign online or download a petition and collect it in your community.
Great. Thank you very much, Matt Schlobaum, with the Maine Fair Trade Campaign.
Thank you.
In a new wave of controversy, the pro-LNG segment of the Passamaquoddy tribal leadership at Pleasant Point and the developer, Quaddy Bay LLC, were granted a waiver of the appraisal of the LNG project by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, BIA. On Tuesday, the tribal council voted 4-1 to request that the BIA abstain from appraising the LNG project, which is originally part of its process to assess and approve any development on tribal lands. 2 weeks ago, the tribal council voted 4-3 to sign a land lease with Quaddy Bay LLC to develop a sacred site on the Passamaquoddy coastal land called Split Rock. This was not the original piece of land the tribe had voted on last summer. On this week's vote, the lieutenant governor and one of the tribal council members who had voted against the LNG development at Split Rock were not there to vote because they were in Augusta for the Maine legislature's vote on the proposed Racino. Hilda Lewis is a tribal council member at Sepayuk. She was the lone vote against the waiver of the appraisal.
The appraisal is basically a protection for the tribe. If they vote for the waiver, this is going to benefit Quaddy Bay LLC.
Tribal Councilor Hilda Lewis says there are many unanswered questions she has about the land lease, including legal implications concerning liability, tribal sovereignty, and pending expansion of the footprint of the development and its exclusion zones, which could require the relocation of a number of homes and tribal buildings. Quaddy Bay's current proposal has been modified to fit the Split Rock site's small size. Currently, they say there will be no tanks, and that instead ships would dock off a half-mile pier for approximately 6 days while the liquefied natural gas is regasified and piped 27 miles underground to the Maritimes and Northeast Pipeline. Some tribal members present at Tuesday's meeting said there was acknowledgement that expansion of the facility to include tanks on nearby reservation land currently occupied was something that was being looked into. No clear answers came from press interviews following the meeting with proponents of the project who made themselves available. Hilda Lewis said she spoke with the BIA before the vote this Tuesday and will continue to be in contact with them over this process.
And that's why I spoke to the Trust Department this morning. They're reviewing the document. He wasn't able to tell me an awful lot. He wasn't even able to tell me what we should do. What he said, though, that was very specific. He said, before you vote on an agreement to waiver the appraisal, you need to have full disclosure from the people who are presenting it. And if they happen to vote this through today, that step has not occurred.
Madonna Soktoma is a tribal member and also served as the Passamaquoddy representative in the Maine legislature. She says the tribal leadership is not living up to its responsibility and that the corporate entity, Quaddy Bay LLC, is being allowed to have its way on the project with the location and now with their monetary assessment of what they think is fair to pay the tribe. She has been against the project from the beginning.
I don't think it's so much the tribal government asking for the waiver.
I think it's Quoddy Bay LLC pushing to bypass this process so they can hurry up the LNG. And it's a bad way to do business. And the tribal council, unfortunately, are willing to go by what they're told by Quoddy Bay LLC, Brian Smith and Donald Smith, which is very wrong. This step in the BIA process is put there for the protection of tribal people. And tribal people need to scrutinize the land lease, and they need to scrutinize what the council is considering to waiver. The appraisal is the value of the project, like you do in other communities. You have valuations and taxes and all that stuff. Well, this project would be treated the same way. The Bureau of Indian Affairs would look at the valuation of the LNG project and all the impacts and the costs involved, and they would make sure that we get the right percentage if it goes through. They would make sure that we get, as a people, the right percentage that we're due, because this LNG project is going to make billions and billions and billions of dollars. And I think the offering of $8 million a year is a drop in the bucket, and there's no assurances in there for the people.
So why do you think Quoddy Bay LLC is pushing for this waiver then?
They've been pushing and bypassing processes in their hurry for to be there first and not have anything go wrong, and they think the quick attacks will not allow the people to group up and scrutinize what they're doing. But we know what's going on. We know what they're doing, and it's wrong. There was never a vote taken to lease land. There is no process in this tribe, within the Passamaquoddy tribe, as to leasing lands other than for recreation or residential use.
Eddie Bassett, tribal member and proponent of the LNG project, spoke to the press after the meeting. End vote.
We're hearing fast track. I mean, is that because we're in competition with Irving? Or I mean, why is there this?
The way it's been described, what I heard, and I just walked into the meeting when, you know, I don't know how long it was going previous to me being there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, there's a competitive edge, I guess, that you're going to lose if the timing doesn't happen just right. You know, if you delay it in the competitive edge, because there are so many other, I guess, potential competitors out there looking to site LNG facilities elsewhere. I guess you can only take so many terminals in a given area before you saturate the area, and you don't have any room in the pipeline or something like that. I don't know.
So you went to Louisiana. We're hearing two different stories now. We're hearing one, this is a new technology because they're going to be pulling the ships up. The ships are going to be serving essentially as tanks, go through regasification versus putting it into tanks. We heard from 2 weeks ago that was new technology. Now we're hearing it's not new technology, that's how they do it in Louisiana. You were in Louisiana. Is that how they do it there?
They have tanks in Louisiana.
So then they don't have the ship pulled up for 6 days. Yeah. And so is this new technology?
I heard, and just like through, I mean, you probably have more information than I do. I'm getting what I read in the newspapers when it comes to technology, mm-hmm. that they're going to use state-of-the-art. We've been guaranteed that by Mr. Smith, that we're going to be using the state-of-the-art technology.
And does state-of-the-art mean that it's been adequately tested for safety and health of the surrounding?
Yeah. The most modern, up-to-date technology available that's safe.
Okay, but if it's new technology, we don't know that. I mean,
I don't think they're going to be just, you know, using this facility as the guinea pig facility.
Tribal member Deanna Francis.
Tribal governor Melvin Francis. The tribal council members Dale Mitchell, Darren Paul, Thomas Louis, and Phil Farrell have completely given our reservation over to Donald Smith. They are willing to put an industrial complex in place of their people. Business first. Passamaquoddy tribe is not precious to the tribal government. It is the dollar. It is the mighty dollar.
The Joint Tribal Council, made up of council members at both Sepayuk and an Indian township, could have a say on this matter. On the day of this vote, members of Indian Township were in Augusta for the Racino.
We did not have any support here from other Indians. They're not here. Where are the Penobscots? Where are the Mi'kmaqs? Where are the Maliseets? They know that our land and our people are being pushed down through the earth. And they're not here to embrace us and to help us and to hold us and to say, yeah, we're behind you. Because this is about land. This is about soul. This is about spirit. They are not here.
Passamaquoddy member at Sepayuk, Vera Francis.
Right. Where are the leaders? That's a very pertinent question, because I think that what happened today, once again, with the waiver for a land appraisal, is a very critical aspect to all Native people beyond this community. So the question of what are the implications of any waiver of tribal lands and Indian lands is something that those leaders will have to face, because what has happened here, in part, obviously, a great part of it is not new. What is not new is that four people can be greased by an outside company, and a whole tribe can be manipulated and exploited and left vulnerable. What is new, and this is the critical part to this vote by those four councillors, once again, three of them being brand new to politics, brand new to tribal politics, is the fact that they will not be able to blame this decision on BIA. That has changed today. So this new assault, because this is what this is, on tribal people, Native people, on tribal lands, on tribal issues, our right to reside, our right to live, our right to enjoy our lands, they have severed that today. That has implication for every tribal community all across North America, not just on this small peninsula called Sepayuk. This has a long, long reach if this goes through. All Native people should be concerned, because the new assault has just started, and it will filter down to all our neighboring tribes. So it isn't not just about LNG. It has broader, much broader reach and implications. It's a very serious problem for all Native people, because no longer can tribes just be put the blame on BIA. The new assault is coming from within, from four tribal councillors who have been greased by an external company that has no standing and no rights. Yet on the 19th of May, they already alienated the lands from the people. And all we are doing is defending that which we love. And there is nothing wrong with that, but we surely will follow this lease. It will never be a comfortable lease, and we will defend that which we love, and that's our homeland, and we have a right to that. Thank you.
Tribal members are now circulating a petition for a referendum that would require the land lease of Split Rock to be put to a tribal-wide vote. The Bureau of Indian Affairs still has to approve the project, considering a number of other issues aside from an appraisal, including cultural impacts. For more information on the project, you can go to savepassamaquoddybay.org or the Quaddy Bay LLC's website, quaddylng.com. We will continue to cover this issue. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown. Matt Murphy engineered today's program. Andy Buckley does web and technical support. And Andrea DeFrancesco and Mac Marquis contributed to today's program.
You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactive@mainindymedia.org. Our website is radioactivenews.org.
Thanks for listening and acting. Stay tuned for more independent news here on your community radio station, WERU.
Radioactive is made possible in part by Artisan Builders, providing environmental design, construction, and renovation for homeowners and local businesses since 1992. 525-7740.